From all walks of life, white women are hearing the call, considering our future, and braving a new world. Join me, Rachel Pendergraft, each week as I bring you the White Women's Perspective.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the White Women's Perspective. I'm your host, Rachel Pendergraft, and we're going to start today by talking about Adele. Adele is the famous singer from the UK, very talented. Some people refer to her as plus size, kind of like, well, she's a talented plus size. Well, she's just plain talented. Very haunting voice, a very good vocalist and so forth. But she is upset. She is upset because she does not like the fact that different political candidates have been using her music during some of their campaign stops. Now, the headline, and I don't remember which paper this was. I think it may have been Huffington Post, but don't quote me on that. But several of the headlines that I've seen have said something to the effect, Adele tells Donald Trump, don't use my songs. And if you just kind of glance at it, because when I first glanced at it and several other headlines, similar type headlines, I thought, well, gosh, you know, I didn't really think much about Adele. Here she is telling Donald Trump, don't use her songs. I mean, he's probably making her songs even more popular just because he has such huge rallies and everything and to be playing her music. And I thought, well, that's not very nice of her. But apparently she's actually telling all of the people, all of the candidates, not to use her music without permission. And, you know, that does make sense. Artists work very hard. They work hard. They put in a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of effort. And so they want to be compensated for using their music, or at least they at least want permission. But Donald Trump, he has been able to score some very good tickets to some of her shows before, so he's a big fan of her. But Adele's fans and attendees at some Trump events in Iowa, they went on social media. They were just kind of wondering if the superstar knew that the Republican front runner at that time, Trump, was using her song Rolling in the Deep and Skyfall at his rallies. And she did not know, and so her press people put out a statement just saying that she's a British citizen, she is not participating in American politics anyway. She even stays out of British politics. And that she said that her statement was not specifically aimed at Trump, even though that's what all the headlines would imply. But that just basically, you know, everybody, hey, please ask her for permission. So I get that. The Trump campaign has also used some Aerosmith music, and Steven Tyler, he told them specifically to stop using his Dream On ballad at their campaign events. And then they have also used Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World. Again, they told Trump, do not use my songs. And the Scott Walker, the former Wisconsin governor, he ran for the GOP nomination this year as part of an anti-union so-called warrior. He used I'm Shipping Out to Boston at an Iowa event. And, of course, the Dropkick Murphys, they're kind of an Irish Celtic punk band. They've got some really good music I enjoy. I've got several of their CDs. Has a really good, it's a mix between a little bit of punk, but still it's definitely got that Irish sound to it. But they tweeted back in response to Scott Walker. They said, we literally hate you. That's what they said. I was kind of hoping that maybe the Dropkick Murphys might be a little bit pro-white. Kind of sometimes maybe think that about Irish people. But I guess that's not necessarily true. Not that Scott Walker is anybody that, you know, is he's not a white nationalist or anything like that. Who knows, Dropkick Murphys? Maybe they do prefer white people and they just don't like Scott Walker's anti-union attitudes. The whole union and pro and anti-union, that, you know, it used to be, I think the unions used to be something very necessary in this country, but they've kind of run amok. They've kind of lost their usefulness. Know anybody out there who's union or married to someone in the union or anything like that? Don't be getting all mad at me. The labor party in this country, the unions and so forth, they are actually selling the workers out. They are in the hip pocket of the politicians that are working to not outsource jobs, but to actually bring illegal immigrants into this country. So anyway, so Adele doesn't want people to use her music. The headlines made it sound like it was a slam against Donald Trump, and it wasn't. Well, back to discussion of Germany, because we've been talking about Germany a lot the last few weeks because of all the Muslims that have been coming in there. I was listening to NPR, National Public Radio, yesterday. I do like to keep in touch with what the liberal views are. It helps have better talking points. But they mentioned on their morning show that they actually had the German ambassador to the U.S. on. They had interviewed him, and he mentioned that Germany just this past year had spent $2.3 billion housing, feeding, giving health care, and so forth to immigrants from North Africa, Middle East that had come into Germany. Can you imagine $2.3 billion? Good grief, that's about all of Donald Trump's money, isn't it? Donald Trump might as well just pay for all of them. $2.3 billion. And it's not like they're coming in there and they're being grateful. They're not coming in there and trying to respect anyone. They're not trying to get along with anyone. Not that it really makes a difference. I mean, some people say, hey, these people aren't trying to assimilate. Well, tell you what, we do. The last thing we want are for non-whites to assimilate in our culture. Assimilation just means interracial dating, interracial marriage, interracial everything else, interracial children. It means white genocide. It means the end of white people. So we don't want assimilation of these people. But they definitely are not showing any gratitude. In fact, they have been sexually harassing, raping, massive, widespread group, attacks on women and children in Germany, in Sweden, in Norway, in Hungary, just on and on and on throughout Europe. These asylum seekers, as they call them, and then the media often calls them children. Well, they're the majority are young men, older teenage men, young men, boys, etc. They're not children. There's a few children out there that they like to use as the poster card asylum seeker children, but for the most part, they're not. But the mayor of a little town in Germany, boy, he sure got the crowd upset. They had a special meeting called by the town council, had a really good turnout. It looked in the video. We've got the video clip on at KKK.com or KKK.BZ. You can switch over to that site. We've got the clip on there. And it's subtitled, although, you know, of course, they're speaking in German because they are in Germany. It's a beautiful language, I think. Anyway, town council had called a meeting. It looks to be about 100, 150 people in the hall there. They are there to show their concern for their families and for what is happening in their small community. Just like here in the United States, the international elites are seeding these non-whites into they're not just going into big cities, they're seeding them. And that's S-E-E-D-I-N-G, just like you would go out and plant a seed in the garden. They are, and that's actually the name for it. They are seeding these asylum seekers, refugees, migrants, whatever you want to call it, non-white people, seeding them into rural communities, into small little hamlets and villages and towns. And they put a camp up of a couple thousand of them, a population that exceeds some of these little hamlets, and it's just, it's a powder keg. waiting to happen. Well, this town has just 5,500 residents. Now, they are just now starting to get the so-called asylum seekers into their little town. A lot of the little towns already have huge populations and centers put up. They just now have taken in 85 asylum seekers in this little town of 5,500, and they're going to get a whole lot more. Well, they met in the Bodschlama town hall for a meeting, and the residents there, they wanted to know, what are you going to do to protect us? What are you going to do for our city? What are you going to do to protect our families and our children? And mothers want to know, what are you going to do to protect my kids and my grandkids? Well, one man there, he said, he stood up and he said, I have a question regarding the school about physical education in the gym, he said. My granddaughter, she's under 10, and it's also happened in a nearby town. That's right, the girls have been harassed by the refugee children, the asylum seekers. Now, that's a translation. The children is a translation. So they know what they're referring to. They're referring to teenagers. He said they get harassed from the windows of the shelter and things like that. How will this be in the summer when the girls, school girls, wear less clothing? You know, they're going to be wearing t-shirts and shorts. Nothing immodest about that. Anyway, he said, and then here's what the mayor said. The mayor said, that's easy. Just don't provoke them and don't walk in these areas. Can you believe that? That's like putting a little girl next to a pedophile and saying, what can we do to keep this little girl safe from this pedophile? And then the answer being, well, little girl, you should not entice the pedophile. You should not be around the pedophile. Well, obviously, shouldn't, but you should not be around the pedophile. You should not entice the pedophile. You should not seduce the pedophile. Be careful that you don't have on a t-shirt or shorts. Don't look pretty. Don't brush your hair. Don't put on any lip gloss, little girl. Don't do anything that might cause this pedophile to have fantasies about you. I mean, this is in essence what this mayor is saying. He's saying that, well, if these little girls, when they're walking to school, and they're talking about elementary kids here, when these little girls are walking to school, if they don't want to be harassed and if they don't want to be victimized by what right now is just 85 asylum seekers who are already causing trouble and they're fixing to get a whole bunch more brought in, he's like, well, don't provoke them. Don't provoke them. Well, obviously, everybody in the room got very, very irate. They said, yeah, let's all keep a 1 meter distance. It's all so easy. They jeered. You're not allowed to walk in your own city anymore? Go home, boy. Who the hell elected you? The migrants come here and we're not allowed to walk here anymore? What kind of mayor is this? He should step down. This is a woman was yelling this. I've already thought about moving. My grandchildren are supposed to go to school here? And on and on. The mayor, he even said that, well, the children should find a different route to the school gym. One that doesn't take them close to, in close proximity to these migrants or asylum seekers. And they said that it's technically not necessary for the girls to walk near the refugees' shelters. There are alternative routes. Again, this is their city. This is a German town. This is their city. And here they're being told by the mayor that instead of getting the perps out of town, that now they have to adjust their daily living. They have to adjust their life. They have to adjust how they live and their conduct. Absolutely appalling. It's traitorous. It is totally traitorous. The one man, he said, it doesn't effing matter. We can't let our children go a longer route. The mayor said, calm down. Am I speaking Chinese? And the one grandfather there said, this is Germany. And he said, Anyway, another woman, she said, I'm not right-wing, but the refugees are dressed better than Germans. Well, I want to point out that one statement there. I'm not right-wing. Well, yeah, she probably is. That's why she's there at the meeting. And that brings me up to a sad, sad state that still so many Americans and white people worldwide are caught up in. I'm not going to say there's more women than men or vice versa. I think they're equally caught up in this idea because I hear it all the time. I was on vacation in Florida a few months ago, and I was there, and I was on the beach. And, of course, anytime I go anywhere, I always take lots of playing cards with me, and I take leaflets. And believe me, wherever I go and the whole trip there, they could probably trace my route because there's playing cards and there's leaflets and everything the whole way there, all around the city and back home to here in Arkansas. But I was talking to this guy. I saw this guy on. It was right during the Confederate flag issue, and he looked like a kind of like a businessman, you know, not a scruffy type guy. Kind of, you know, an older man, about 45 or so. He just looked like somebody, I guess you could say, perhaps maybe that had money, and someone who was distinguished. I guess that's a better way to put it. Anyway, and he had a Confederate flag on his shirt. He was walking down the beach. He was walking with his dog, and he had a couple grandkids running behind him. And it said something on the flag, had some sort of historical quote or something like that. And so I stopped and struck up a conversation with him, and we just seemed to agree on everything. And then out comes this, but I'm not racist, and I have black friends. It's like, oh my God, here we go again. It's like, no one can have a conversation about race or in defense of white people without coming across and oh, but by the way, I'm not racist, and I have white people. Well, you know, we have this billboard in Harrison. We're working on getting them up in other parts of the country. And the slogan is just very simple. It says, it's not racist to love your people. Very good slogan, straight to the point. A lot of people get it. You don't have to think about it. It just, you know, it lets people know, because the connotation that people have been given of racist is that you just hate everyone, you want to kill them, you want to murder them, and that's what a racist is. Well, yeah, we do want them the hell out of our country. That's true. We do want separation. We don't want them with our children and with our families. So, absolutely, we hate what is happening to our family. But just to see some little black kid somewhere and not just, God, I really hate him, and boy, I just wish he was dead. Well, most people aren't thinking that way. And so if that's what the modern definition of racist is, and, you know, of course, white people are not racist for the most part. So it's a very, very good slogan, because it's important to keep everything positive. Our people have been so victimized by this compassionate ideology that we just have to feel sorry for everyone except for white people. You have to be careful about how you speak and how you present your message, because if you don't, then you come across as if it's not that you love white people, it's just that you hate everyone else. And so you have to always have to take your message and put it in the right direction in an understandable format that the average man and woman on the street can understand. So this guy that I'm talking to on the beach, if he were to drive by one of our billboards, he'd be saying, yeah, I agree with that. It's not racist to love your people. I'm not a racist. I love my people. There you go. That'll do it. Let me check out that website. Listen to some of those radio shows there. So, you know, that's a good message for people to get. Nevertheless, that just shows how most people are. That's why we have to be careful about our messaging and how we direct our ideas to people. Because he is just like many. Now, not every white person is going to be wearing a Confederate flag. They might think that, well, the Confederate flag, it's just a, you know, nowadays is just such an oppressive symbol, and it's a symbol of slavery and so forth, which it's not. We're not going to get into a historical lesson or debate about the Confederate flag now. But a lot of people are just scared of the Confederate flag, but they still love their people. They have this inner instinct in their deep down in their gut. You know, it's a white mom somewhere. She's working hard to raise her family and working hard. She's trying to save money to send her kids through college and make sure they have the things they need to succeed in life, and just wants to have a nice family life. Maybe get a pay raise at work or something like that. If she's a stay-at-home mom, then, you know, maybe she's just looking forward to date night or whatever. Still in college, she's hoping to get through college and find a good job, maybe find a good husband or something like that. So people don't, they have this instinct for the most part that, yeah, they want children that look like them. They may not be able to verbally express it, but white people for the most part have this inner instinct that they need to protect something, or they want something that looks like them. And that's what is being, that idea is what is trying to be worked out of us. Our enemy wants to get that instinct. They want to tear that instinct away from our people. So anything that we can do to make them feel good about the instinct that they do have, as young mothers somewhere, the college students, family people, whoever they are, young teenagers, if we can make them feel good about loving their people and that they're not filthy, hateful, wretched souls for loving their people, then that's what we need to do. So now, before we go, we just have a little bit of time left. Oh gosh, I've got a couple different things here that I was going to talk about. I'm not sure which one. Well, first off, I was going to mention real quick, just Phyllis Schlafly. I don't know, some of you older ladies listening to the show, you probably know who she is. Some of you younger ones, you may not. Phyllis Schlafly, she's kind of like the, I guess you could, if there was a queen of evangelical Christians, she would probably be the queen of evangelical Christians. She is credited for single-handedly growing the grassroots movement that stopped the ERA, that was the Equal Rights Amendment back in the 70s. That would have allegedly, according to the feminist movement, ensured that men and women had equal rights. But actually, what it did and what it would have done, it would have undermined women. It would have undermined the family. I remember I was just 12 or 13 years old at the time, and I could even see at the time that it was just a total lunacy. And I called, you know, started calling different my senators and congressmen and stuff like that. I just thought, hey, they might want to hear from a young girl about what she has to think about this, since all the media is implying that every woman out there is for the Equal Rights Amendment. Because really, it wasn't about equal rights. It was about subjugating the family, and actually had some very, very unfavorable things in it to women. But anyway, so Phyllis Schlafly, she's considered the one who really stopped the ERA movement. I could go on and on with the rest of her credentials. I did that a month or so ago on the show. Just written numerous books, all types of awards, law degrees. Just, she's an amazing woman. But she has come out once again. She did this here about a month ago. She is a Trump supporter. And she's come out once again talking about that this is America's last chance election. Talking about how the number one issue that Americans need to consider in this presidential race of 2016 is who is going to stop the immigration into this country? Who is going to put a stop to it? And so this lady, she's up in her late 70s now, but she is still speaking out and working hard, and she's a very, very well-respected woman. Well, another well-respected woman is Elaine Donnelly. Now, Elaine Donnelly is the president of the Center for Military Readiness. and it's an independent, nonpartisan public policy organization, and they specialize in military and social issues, and it was founded in 1993. Now, Mrs. Dawn Lee, she was the member of the Defense Advisory Council, a committee on women in the services, for a three-year term from 1984 to 86. In 1992, she was appointed to the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. She's the author of a chapter titled Defending the Culture of the Military, which was published for the Air Force University Press. She, let's see, in 2007, Duke University Journal of Gender Law and Policy published her peer-reviewed article titled Constructing the Co-Ed Military. She's been interviewed in numerous places, Washington Post, USA Today, Congressional Quarterly, on and on, news websites, cable news sites all around the country. She has participated in programs sponsored by the Naval Institute, Hillsdale College, Foreign Policy Institute, Independent Women's Forum, Heritage Foundation, on and on. She was the first woman to receive the Admiral John Henry Towers Award from the New York Naval Aviation Commandery in support of her, in recognition of her support for naval aviation. I could go on and on. She's just an amazing, amazing woman. But what is interesting about her, and I like to visit her website quite often just to get, because they always, The liberal media out there, again, just like they do with the feminist movement, they imply that certain elements in society are speaking for all women. So now the National Organization for Women, which is pro-abortion, pro-queer, pro-transgender, pro-just all of these things, they think, you know, prostitution should be legalized and so forth. The media implies that these are the spokespersons for women, when in fact the Concern Women for America, a Christian organization of women, is actually much, much larger than now. And the same with this, the Center for Military Readiness. The media always wants to apply when they're talking about gender issues in the military and women in the military. They always bring out some feminists to talk about what women want in the military and what they think is fair and what they think is right and what they think should be equal and so forth. They don't, for the most part, even though Elaine Donnelly, even though she's been well represented in many areas, there's a lot of news that happens all the time about women and the military. And she probably gets just a smidgen of the press in response to those surveys and articles and press statements and so forth. But she has some, she's very, very insightful. And here's what she is talking about now, the 2016 election. She said that, well, first off, she wants people to be aware of where the candidates, Republican Party, we already know where the position of the Democratic candidates are in response to women in combat positions in the military. So she's, they sent out a survey, her organization, asking the presidential candidates what their position was on women in the military. And so, let's see, I've got a PDF here of the survey that they sent out. And Senator Ted Cruz, he answered yes to all the questions. He provided a few additional comments on question number 3 regarding women in land combat. He said, the Marine Corps request must be reconsidered. As long as the requirements are fair and universally applied, the military must always place the best person for the job at hand, whether male or female, but we cannot let political correctness compel the military to lower its standard. Rick Santorum, and I like Rick Santorum, he's sits on the Supreme Court, running for president, pro-life, a good family man and so forth. I like him, a former Pennsylvania senator. He answered yes to all the questions. He said, in response to sound priorities and social experimentation, he said, "I will review and revise military personnel policies that assign higher priority to egalitarian social agendas over military effectiveness." He said that he will support, and this is a big one that always concerns me. He said, "I will support the continuance of women's exemption from selective service obligations. We respect women in the military, but when we're talking about direct ground combat, if we start making gender neutrality the most important factor, then we put lives at risk." And also he said that "I would reconsider the Obama administration's decision to overrule the U.S. Marine Corps request for exceptions to women in combat mandates." He said, "We all respect and appreciate the role of women in the military, recognize their courageous service. However, scientific research and empirical evidence put forth by the U.S. Marine Corps shows that women naturally have physical disparities that cannot be mitigated." And there's some more interesting stuff here. I think next week I'm going to talk more about this in length, and about a few of the more recent studies. Now, again, I'm not saying that women shouldn't be in the military. We've got a couple women here working at the national office who are Army veterans. I know other women who are currently in the military, but they are in what you would call support positions. They're not in combat positions. And it has been the driving goal of feminists for years now has been to mandate that women be included in the draft. Can you imagine the little 90-pound, 120-pound, 18-year-old girl that's just thinking about, you know, maybe she's waitressing somewhere at the local Pizza Hut or going off to school or something like that, and that she would be expected to be in a draft? Or in combat position? Absolutely not. And you know, the goal of feminism is not to win over men and put men in their place. The true goal of feminism is the destruction of the family, just like the true goal of the men's rights movement, who, by the way, also supports women in the draft and so forth. These are two extremes. You have counterfeit patriarchy, which is held up in the men's rights movement, and then you have feminism, which is just a different side of the coin, but they both meet in the middle with their goal as destruction of the family. And so feminism destroys women, it destroys womanhood, it destroys the family, just like the men's rights movement also destroys the family. And so Elaine Donnelly, the Military Readiness Committee, excellent research and groundbreaking studies that they support on not just what it means to have women in combat positions, but also a lot of the support positions that they put women into. The support positions are oftentimes just as dangerous as the combat positions. And then, of course, they also talk about this new phenomena of having homosexuals and lesbians and transgenders and all that soup mix of craziness in our military. Okay, well, I am all out of time. I've actually gone over a little bit today. We will talk more next week about some of these things, especially some of the issues concerning women in the military. And of course, whatever else comes back up in the week, and I always have a lot of good tidbits of information just from here or there from my past studying and research on gender issues and women issues and my years of activism in the white nationalist movement. Well, until next week, just remember that it is your right to stand up and speak out in defense of your people. And not only is it your right, but it is your duty. This isn't a job just for the men, folk. This is a job for all of us, for the men, for the ladies, for the teens out there. It's a job even for the little children that they can learn by you and learn by your example. Remember that women are the gateway to the home, and there are so much influence that you have on your children, on the children of your friends, the children in your family, those that you come across. Hey, children just like us ladies, right? So it's not just our right, but it is our duty. And also, just remember that this isn't a war just for our children. This isn't a war just to save the gals. It's not a war just to save the white men. This is a war to save white families, white people. White families, the basis and cornerstone of civilization. So until next week, just stay proud, stay strong, keep fighting, and never back down. God bless. I want to thank you for listening to this edition of The White Women's Perspective. I want to remind you that it is not only your right, but it is your duty to stand courageously and boldly for white Christian revival, to stand for our race, and to stand up and say no to white genocide. If you have comments, suggestions, or questions, you can email me at Rachel May, that's RachelMay@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and God bless.